Hare Krishna. So how are you all enjoying this festival of chariots? Are you feeling bad that today is the last day of this festival? So will you be looking forward to this festival next year? Counting days? Okay. Thank you. I'm also very happy to be here with you all. I always enjoy being in South Africa. There was a time when I used to spend a lot of time here, and I got to know so many of you wonderful people. And it's a beautiful country, the beautiful weather, and a beautiful natural abundance. And I feel very fortunate to be connected to this country, to be connected to all of you. So today's topic is science, evolution, and intelligent design. Actually, I didn't select the topic. The organizers of the festival selected the topic. And so when they suggested, I said, fine, I'll speak on that. And I hope in course of my presentation, I don't offend anybody, especially the scientists. Science actually is a very important way to understand things, or science is the real understanding of things. What is the definition of science? The definition of science is a system of knowledge obtained through experimentally verified methods. Or in simple words, it can be said that science is the experimentally verified facts. When the facts are experimentally verified, we recognize it as science. If something cannot be experimentally verified, then it cannot be accepted as science. For example, we know that a water molecule is a combination of two atoms of hydrogen and one atom of oxygen. And now when we analyze it through electrolysis process, then what do we get? We get two volumes of hydrogen and one volume of oxygen. So this is how it is experimentally verified. And so that way, science is actually a very, very authentic process of acquiring knowledge. But the problem with science today is that science has a code, modern science has a code, that you cannot accept the existence of God. If you're a scientist and if you accept God, then you won't be recognized as a scientist. Do you know that? How many of you know that? Right? Raise your hands, like if you know. Yeah. You accept God, then their thing is you copped out. You're not a scientist anymore. So the science today is in total defiance of the existence of God. But if we consider, the early scientists were not actually atheists. The early scientists were very much believed in God. Only thing is that the approach of science was to find out why things happen in a certain way. Like Newton, he saw the apples falling from the tree. And he considered why all the time, always apples fall. Why some apples don't fly. And he probed into it and he came up with understanding the reason behind the falling. And the result was the gravitational pull. Everything, gravity is pulling everything to the center of the earth. Yeah, maybe you can just stick it at the back. Yeah. Thank you. You know how much Newton believed in God? There's an anecdote about Newton. Newton had a friend, a philosopher, who didn't believe in God. And often they used to have arguments about the existence of God. And one day this friend of Newton came to his laboratory and he found the model of the solar system. The different planets are moving around the sun due to the arrangements of gears and levers. And so he asked Newton, who made this? Newton said, no one made this. He said, come on, tell me. You must have made it. He said, no, no one made it. In this way, his friend kept on insisting and Newton kept on denying. So then finally Newton told him, look, when I point out to this model and tell you that no one made this, you don't believe me. But when I point out to the night sky, innumerable stars and planets maintaining such a wonderful system, and I tell you that there must be a creator behind that, somebody who is maintaining that, then you don't want to accept. See how foolish you are. So, any intelligent man, when he thinks about the affairs of this material nature in a proper way, cannot possibly deny the fact that there is a creator, there is an intelligent being with an inconceivable ability who is maintaining everything. So that is the intelligent conclusion. So unfortunately, modern science has gone into a certain direction which is a wrong direction, and that is why the modern science is, in spite of making a remarkable advancement, is not leading people to the ultimate benefit of their existence, ultimate benefit of their life. You see, the goal of all knowledge is to understand God and surrender unto Him. In Sanskrit, there is a saying, Sheshe Vidyar Phal Jani Ho Nishchay, Krishna Pado Padme Janu Chitto Vritti. Remember that the goal of education is to remain attached to the lotus feet of the Lord. That is the ultimate goal of life. And when we make a real scientific approach, then we see that actual knowledge is naturally scientific, because it is not difficult to establish the happening or course of its action in a systematic way. Like the sun always rises in the east. It's a scientific fact. No one can ever say that the sun rises on the in the west or north. In this way we see that in nature there is a wonderful system. Nature follows. And everything in nature follows a wonderful system. And we have to understand that there is an intelligent design. There is an intelligent being who actually designed everything in such a way. Therefore, the goal of our discussion is to come to that recognition of that intelligent being, who is not only intelligent, who is supremely intelligent personality, who is behind all the affairs, who is the cause of all causes. Behind every action, there is a cause. And in this way, when you go to the ultimate cause, then we will see that that is the Supreme Personality. And the information about Him is available in a scientific way. Now the point is, okay, here I want to make one point, is that, you know, in the recent past, say in about last 100 years, there hasn't been much scientific development. There's been a lot of technological development, but not scientific development. Yes, technologically we have made a remarkable advancement, but very little scientific advancement. That is finding out the truth of things. The secrets about behind every happening in this nature. Now, another problem with modern science is that it is trying to establish everything through their own experiments. They are trying to establish the facts through experiments. That is, they're making an approach depending upon the knowledge that has been acquired through their senses, mind, and intelligence. That process of acquiring knowledge is called ascending process. Ascending, rising. Your informations, you're gathering informations, and the more informations you gather, the more you understand things. That's one way of understanding. But the real knowledge, the best possible way to acquire knowledge, is through a descending process. Actually, the process of acquiring knowledge is descending. For example, how did you all learn the alphabets? By means of your own endeavor? How many of you learned the alphabet on your own? But somebody came and told you that this is A, maybe your mother told you. This is A, this is B, this is C, this is D. So the knowledge came to you and you accepted the knowledge with faith. And then in course of your development, that knowledge that knowledge had been verified. When you grew up and started to read books, then it has been verified, it has been established that A is A and B is B. So the actual way or proper way of receiving knowledge is a descending process. An intelligent person will depend upon the descending process. That means a person who has the knowledge, you receive it from him. In this respect, an example can be given. Like, you see the baby birds, they can't eat food straight away themselves. And the birds cannot breastfeed the baby birds. So what do the birds do? What does the mother bird do? Mother bird eats herself, half digests the food, and then feeds the baby bird. So in a way, the actual way of receiving knowledge is something like that. A person who has digested the knowledge, he imparts it, he gives it to you, and that is how you receive it. And that is an intelligent way of receiving knowledge. Like for example, if I come to Durban and I have to go someplace, I got an address in Durban, 48 Essenwood Street. Now if I have to find that place, Essenwood Street in Durban, by myself, after coming here, can you imagine how much trouble I have to take? But I land in Durban airport, I come out of the airport to get a taxi, and I ask the taxi driver, do you know where Essenwood Road is? And he drives me to that street, to that place. He knows where it is, therefore he can immediately take me there. So the intelligent way of receiving knowledge is to receive it from somebody who has it. Upadekshanti te gyanam. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying, the one who has the knowledge, he imparts the knowledge unto a qualified student. And that is the way of receiving knowledge. And that's actually what is happening all the time. Even in the scientific world, when somebody wants to study physics, what does he do? He goes to a university, enrolls in the faculty, and studies, learns the subject under a person who is an expert in the subject. And that is how he receives knowledge. So that is the natural way of receiving knowledge. That is, to receive the knowledge from an authorized source in a descending process. He gives it. One who has it, he gives it, and that's how we get it. Now, in this respect, we have one consideration about modern science, like to point out how the descending process is so rich and so authentic and so real, so easy to receive the knowledge in that way. Because ultimately the knowledge in the absolute sense, you know how all the knowledge came to this world? The Supreme Personality of Godhead gave the knowledge. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is all knowing, he gave the knowledge, and those knowledges are known as the Vedas. And that is the real source of knowledge. The Vedas are giving us the informations not only of this world, material world, but also gives the information about the spiritual reality. Like, one problem with modern science is a theory of organic evolution. That is their key point of rejecting God. That is the main source of rejecting the existence of God or acceptance of God. Maybe, and in this context, I can just point out how modern world, modern science became atheistic. As I was saying, that early scientists were all theists, or they all believed in God. They knew that God is there, He is the creator, and it is by His divine arrangement everything is happening and everything is maintaining such a beautiful order. But the deviation actually started from the time when they invented clock. Probably we can't even imagine, but the invention of clock was a big thing. Was the biggest thing. It's something like going to moon in those days. And that's why when you go to Europe, you see all the churches have elaborate clocks there. Like in Munich, there are churches when it strikes the hour, high up at the top of the church, a door opens up and the dancing figures come out and they play music. And then after the performance, they all go back and the door closes. Every half an hour it happens, this comes out. So those days the church was the center, and we can see that how this invention of clock affected everyone's life. That was the biggest thing. But with the invention of clock, what actually happened, man started to think that just as by winding the clock, you can make it run, God, after creating, He set things, He wound things up in a certain way, and now He is gone. And things are running on its own. And in a way, it's quite factual. Like when we see the nature, then we see the things are happening by itself. So this is how they derived, or this is how they came into a conclusion. God has created, and then He set everything in an autopilot, and it's moving on its own, and God is not involved at all. And this has been identified as something like sending God in exile. In the medieval Europe, if somebody was against the king did not execute him right there. The king used to send him in exile. And then he used to send the assassins and kill them. Because if he killed them in the state, in the country, then there could have been an upheaval from his followers. So he was sent in exile. So this has been identified also in a similar way. God was sent in exile, and then he was assassinated. And now, they came to a point, God is dead. Not so much the scientists, but many philosophers came up with that theory. God was, but now He is dead. God is dead. And now, there is no God. So that is the central theme, or central code of modern science. Don't want to accept God. And then they came up with a fantastic theory. The theory of organic evolution. Theory of organic evolution. By chance, under certain temperature and pressure, some molecules got together, they combined, just assembled by chance, and life came. That is how life appeared. Our famous Darwin's conclusion. And then that life evolved through its struggle in nature. through the struggle, it developed and acquainted himself and adjusted himself into the world. And in this way, they evolved into monkeys, and from monkeys came man. Okay, fine. Now the question is that if monkeys became man, then why there are still monkeys? Why didn't all the monkeys become man? And the other consideration is, over a period of time, with so many years of our experiment, scientific experiment, have we ever seen a monkey becoming a man? Have you ever seen a monkey giving birth to a man, a human being? It can work the other way around. So, on the other hand, let's see the Vedic understanding, the real source of knowledge. You see, the real source of knowledge also accepts evolution. But what kind of evolution? Not evolution of the body, but evolution of consciousness. From lower consciousness, one can evolve into evolve into higher consciousness. And in this way, they have identified there are different levels. So Vedas are actually pointing out that the sign of life, what is the sign of life? The sign of life is in consciousness. Like, wherever there is life, there is consciousness. Wherever there is consciousness, we have to accept there is life. Like, just consider a small little seed falls on the ground. What happens under proper condition? A seedling comes out. Then it grows, eventually becomes a huge tree. That's the sign of life. Now you consider, does a tree have consciousness? Answer is yes. Who will ever deny that? Trees are conscious, plants are conscious, because they're alive. Now, they describe, there are six symptoms of life. Modern science couldn't come anywhere near that. Just consider how scientific it is. What are the six symptoms of life? Birth. Anything that is alive must have been born at some point in time. Then growth, just a seedling, gradually grew into a tree. Change. In winter, in autumn, the leaves fall. In winter, the trees are completely bare. Then in spring, the new leaves come. In summer, it's full of leaves and flowers. And then these flowers develop into a fruit. And in autumn, the fruits ripen. And inside the fruits, there are seeds. In these seeds, there are the possibilities of other trees. So birth, growth, change, reproduction, symptom of life. Then decay, it begins to wither. a tree that was so strong and powerful, in course of time, it becomes old. It doesn't, the tree leaves don't come so abundantly. There's no more flowers and fruits, and eventually it dies. Take any life, these six principles will apply. Birth, growth, change, reproduction, decay, and death. Now consider, the Vedic sciences classify the lives in four different categories. Four categories of life. You know, four ways of birth. Four ways of generation of life. One is from the body itself. That is called swedaja. The word sveda means sweat. Just as sweat comes from the body, the offspring comes from the body. Can you consider what kind of offspring they are? What kind of living creatures they are? Amoeba and hydra. How do they grow? These are the lowest species of life. Unicellular living entities. One body, nucleus splits, and then it becomes two. That's one kind of life. Another kind of life that comes from seeds. That is easy to understand. Trees and plants, they develop from, they grow from seeds. Another kind of life grows from eggs. Birds and reptiles, they grow like that. Fish, they grow from, the life comes from eggs and embryo. And in this way, different types of bodies are developing due to different grades of consciousness. The individuals with lowest consciousness are in lowest form of life. And then they're evolving. Like say amoeba is the lowest form. The trees and plants are superior to that form of life. Then insects, worms, birds, reptiles, they come into the category of the life that develop from eggs. Then more developed are the ones that develop from embryo, like animals, or in simple words, mammals develop from embryo. And of these, all these life forms, what is the most advanced form of life? The life of human beings. Why? Because the human beings have been endowed with most advanced intelligence, most developed consciousness. Not only comparatively, they have developed the most advanced, the most developed consciousness, but they also have the ability to expand their consciousness. This faculty only the human beings have. No other living entities have this ability to expand their consciousness to an unlimited extent. And in this way, different forms of life has been categorized in five different categories of consciousness. The first category is covered consciousness. Consciousness is there, but it's practically covered. So much so that it seems that there is no consciousness whatsoever. Trees and plants fall in that category. Then comes the shrunken state of consciousness. The consciousness is there, but it's in a shrunken state. Like the, from insects to animals fall in that category. Then the third category of consciousness is called bud state of consciousness. And the human beings fall in that category. The bud, apparently, it is in a shrunken state. Right? Have you seen a small little bud? Do you see any petals or stigma? And no, it's all are in a completely shrunken state. So human beings are also in a shrunken state, apparently. But they have the ability to expand their consciousness. This prerogative only the human beings have. That's why it's considered that the human form of life is so precious. Labdha sudurlabham idam bahu sambhavanti. The Vedas are pointing out that now that you got this human form of life, don't miss this opportunity. This very, very rare opportunity that you have received, don't waste it, don't squander it. Because it is this opportunity is very rare to achieve. And the human life, there is no guarantee when death may come. We cannot predict that we are going to live for so many years or so many months or so forth. Death may come at any moment. Therefore, don't waste this opportunity. And what is the goal for the human life? Tamaso ma jyotirgamayo. From the world of darkness, enter into the world of light. From the world of ignorance, enter into the world of absolute knowledge. From the world of mortality, from the world of death, enter into the region of immortality. That's the goal of human. Now, how to take advantage of this human form of life? That also has been very categorically pointed out. That just as a bud, especially a lotus bud, when it is properly exposed to the sun, under the shelter of water, then the bud begins to bloom. So just as the lotus needs the exposure to sun, human consciousness needs the exposure to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is considered to be like the sun. The source of all light, the source of all knowledge, the source of everything. Become exposed to Him under the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master who is compared to the water. In his shelter, when you become exposed to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the human consciousness will begin to evolve. The human consciousness will begin to bloom. And then eventually it will become fully bloomed. When you become fully exposed, fully conscious of the Supreme Personality of God. Vedas have very systematically pointed out this need. So now I'll briefly go into, actually today the class is rather short, I have only 1 hour. In 5 minutes, I'll just conclude. The next consideration is the intelligent design. In this nature, we see a wonderful intelligent arrangement. Intelligent arrangement means systematic arrangement. So here is another mistake with the modern science. Their theory is that everything happened by chance. The creation is a happening of accident. There was a big bang or whatever, some fantastic theories they have. You know, from an accident, creation came. In this respect, one American philosopher made a very wonderful observation or statement. He said that the concept that creation came from accident sounds as absurd as saying that there was an explosion in a printing press, and when the types fell, they fell in such an order that Webster Dictionary got printed. I mean, it's just a common sense thing, you know. Like, if I just show you this watch that I'm wearing, and if I tell you, that this watch is a product of an accident. There was a big bang, and this watch appeared. Will any of you accept this? Or even if I say that this watch fell from the sky, will any of you accept it? When I see the watch, I know there is somebody that made it. I may not see him, I may not know him, but my intelligence says that there must be a maker. So simple thing like a watch, what to speak of a watch, you know, take this glass. Can it be a product of an accident? Now when you see this beautiful arrangement that is maintaining such a wonderful order, how can we say that it is a product of accident? Now if there is an intelligent design, then we have to accept that there is an intelligent being who created that intelligent design, and under his arrangement, this intelligent thing is going on. This intelligent design is performing. So, I'll simply appeal to your common sense, to your intelligence, to come to the conclusion on this very simple point. Is this creation a product of an accidental happening, or there is an intelligent design and there is a designer behind that? Thank you all very much. I'll give you some time to question and I'll try to answer them. Thank you. When we find spider and snakes in our house, how do we treat them? Get a snake charmer. Whose question is this? Very intelligent design, no doubt. Well, we don't know. We are not snake experts. So, why do we need signs when we have the Gita with its knowledge of life and God? Yeah, the Bhagavad Gita is the book of real science, giving a perfect scientific understanding. How many of you have read Bhagavad Gita? Okay, most of you have read Bhagavad Gita. Now, in Bhagavad Gita, what did you find out? What did you understand? What did you learn? Didn't you understand the difference between matter and soul? And didn't you get to know about the nature of soul, characteristics of soul? And then didn't you get to know about the Supreme Soul? Who is the Supreme Soul? The origin, source of all souls? Krishna. And what is the ultimate goal of life? Surrender to Krishna. That is the real science. Yes, that's true. Bhagavad Gita is real science. But of course, there is no harm in studying science because they're giving us information, giving us knowledge. Has science got anything to do with human society's lack of Vedic knowledge, which is leading to degradation of society? Alcohol abuse, drug abuse, woman abuse, broken homes, etc., which is perceived as enjoyment in this material world. Yeah, this is the result of a society that does not believe in God, an atheistic society. A society that thinks the goal of life is simply to eat, drink, and be merry. That is the ultimate outcome of that society. There'll be total chaos and intense suffering. Today's world has everything in abundance. This world is full of abundant world. But unfortunately, their hearts are empty. Materially, they have so much. But internally, they are bankrupt. And that's why there is no happiness, no peace, and no prosperity. Spiritual prosperity. Can you explain the God particle and our connection to it? Whose question is this? Can you identify who asked this question? Anyway, the God particle. It's your question? Okay. You see, don't use expressions like that, God particle. God is the source of everything. Like, we all came from Him, everything came from Him. And do you want to reduce Him to just one particle? He's the absolute truth. And if you want to know about Him, you have to follow a specific process. Like as I was saying, like if you want to study physics, then you have to go to a certain faculty and study the books there. So if you want to know about God, then yeah, approach a qualified teacher and study under him. He will give you the information. Okay, so I'll give you the definition of God. In Sanskrit, the definition of the word, the Sanskrit, the word for God is Bhagavan. The word Bhagavan means one who has Bhaga. Just like in Sanskrit, one who has wealth or dhan is Dhanavan. One who has knowledge or gyan is Gyanavan. So when one possesses something, he is considered to be Ban. So when one possesses Bhaga, he is considered to be Bhagavan. The word Bhaga means, all the wealth, all the strength, all the beauty, all fame, all knowledge, and all renunciation. So these six things in totality: wealth, strength, beauty, fame, knowledge, and renunciation. One who possesses that, he is Bhagavan. Obviously, he is not a particle. He is a person. He is the supreme person. So that is the definition. Yeah, you want to say something?
I just wanted to mention that.
Take the mic.
God particle. That's what the scientists are talking about.
Well, to begin with, the scientists are saying God doesn't exist. So what's the point in, you know, finding a particle? When you don't believe that something exists, then where's the question of finding it?
Now there is the realization.
No, they are not realizing. Somebody may come up with some fantastic theory just to create a little sensation. That's about all they do. Hare Krishna Maharaj, what is the power of positive thinking, or is it left to destiny anyway? No, why should positive thinking be left to destiny? Positive thinking is, you have the faculty, you have a mind, and what is the faculty of the mind? What can mind do? What does the mind do? Mind thinks. Now, how you will think, it is up to you. If you want to think all negative things, then you have the prerogative. You can think about all kinds of bad things. Or you can think of all good things. Or you can think about the supreme good, God. It's up to you. So when you think about good, then it's positive thinking. And when you think about the supreme good or supreme absolute truth, the absolute supreme personality of Godhead, then it is the absolutely positive thinking. Next question is, Hare Krishna Maharaj, is Sanskrit a universal language? Does this not confirm the first medium of education? Sanskrit is, you see, it can, I mean, when we say universal language, that means accepted by everybody. But unfortunately, that is not the state of affairs with Sanskrit language. Sanskrit language is the mother of all languages. All languages came from Sanskrit. But unfortunately, today's world has rejected the mother. So, we can't claim that Sanskrit is the root of all languages, etc. But doesn't matter. Sanskrit language is actually a storehouse of inconceivable wealth. But fortunately, that wealth has been translated into English by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. And He has presented it to the world. And now His books, which is containing and presenting the essence of the absolute wisdom, which is presenting the absolute wisdom throughout the world, has been translated in all different languages. Our books have been translated, Prabhupada's books have been translated to more than 200 languages today. So this is how the wealth that was there, somewhat hidden in Sanskrit, has been distributed all over the world by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Therefore, we don't have to study Sanskrit anymore. I mean, if you want, you can study. But there's no need. Once I expressed my desire to learn Sanskrit to Prabhupada. And you know what was Prabhupada's response? What's the use? Why do you not want to learn Sanskrit? And I tried to justify my reason, try to reason it with him. But then Prabhupada pointed out, there's no need. The amount of time that you will waste in studying Sanskrit, you study my books. Utilize that energy to study my books. And I did that. Prabhupada actually asked me, instead of learning Sanskrit, Prabhupada asked me to translate his books into Bengali. And that gave me such a wonderful opportunity to go deep into his books. Hare Krishna Swamiji, I fully accept the existence of God and that He is the Creator, but He has made this world too complicated. It's like throwing a man in the middle of an ocean, hands and legs bound, and telling him to swim to safety. Kindly explain it. Whose question is this one? Can you raise your hand? Who wrote this question? Anyway, thank you. Well, if you take that analogy, then I'll say that God actually made a very simple world. But we made it complicated. In His world, everything is simple. See, for example, we need light. The sun comes up in the morning and floods this world with light. We need food. There's abundance of food. We need shelter. He has created shelter for us. Whatever we need, He has provided. The world that He created is very simple. But it is we that complicated this world. Say, for example, you take a bag of rice, keep it in the middle of the street, in the middle of the night. In the morning, some birds will come, and they will eat as much food they need, they'll fly away. Then some animals will come, some goat and some cows will come, they'll also eat as much as they need, go away. But as soon as a man comes, he'll pick up the whole bag and walk away. See, God created everything in such a simple way, but we have complicated everything for ourselves. God said, there's enough food for you, I give the food. But man came and said, no. To get the food, you have to pay money. In the nature, do you feel any scarcity of food in the animal society or bird society? There's enough food for everyone. Do they have to buy food? An elephant needs about 100, 200 kilos of food every day. Does the elephant has to go to the market with a pocket full of rands to buy the food? No, there is enough. But when a man needs food, he has to go. Who created this complexity? Who created this system? Man. Anyway, so now let us conclude that it is the human society, the human being in this society have tied your hands and legs up and threw you into the ocean. Now, naturally, you are in very, very precarious condition. So what should you do? Just call out to the Lord and He will come and rescue you from this difficult situation. Because He is the only one who can save you from this precarious condition. And just to, this is the last question, and I'll end this question with a small little point. As you questioned, you know, like, why did He create this world in such a complex way? Anyway, so my point is, He didn't make it complex. He made it very simple. And why did He create the world? You know, because we wanted to come here. And we wanted to enjoy without Him. And that is why we are in such a terrible state. But we don't realize that. we want to continue our game here in this material. It's something like the child wants to go and play with his friends in the park. The father says, that the child wants to play with his friends. He says, go, let's go. So he takes him to the park, and the child is, he found his friends, and he's completely absorbed in playing with them. Father is sitting on a bench next to the park, just watching the child. The child has completely forgot the father, but the father didn't forget the child. He is watching him. Then it becomes dark, all his friends are gone, and the child cries out, "Daddy, Daddy, where are you?" The father comes, picks up the child, and tells him, "Now let's go home." So our condition is like that. We're like a bunch of kids playing in this field of material nature, and we are completely absorbed in our play. But then, at one point, when you become afraid and call out to him, "Krishna, Krishna, where are you? Please save me. Please take me." Then he will come, pick you up, and say, "Let's go." So that is how careful, that is how merciful Krishna is. Thank you very much. All glories to Krishna.